This is CJSF 90.1 FM, and you're tuning into our super summer programming. I'm Hallelujah.
And I'm Stella. And together, we'll be highlighting the queer community, environmental issues, and upcoming local events.
Stay tuned for interviews, discussion, and music from our collections.
Burnaby is located on the ancestral and stolen territories of the Halkomelem and Squamish-speaking peoples, the lands that they have cared for since time immemorial. Today, I'm here with Clea, the Director of Operations at the Still Moon Arts Society. Could you introduce yourself to our listeners and just tell them a little bit about you?
Sure. My name is Clea. I've been with Still Moon Arts Society for a little over 3 years. And my background is in both community organizing and also in ecology. So previous to this job, I worked at the Pacific Salmon Foundation, which was a wonderful way to get to know more about salmon and a great organization. And also a lot longer ago than that, I was one of the founding directors of SFU's Graduate Student Society. So I also have a background in bringing people together.
Okay, cool. I didn't know there was a little SFU connection there. That's nice. Starting off for some context, what does the Still Moon Arts Society do in and for the Vancouver community, especially in Still Creek?
Well, we're based, like you said, around the Still Creek watershed. It's Vancouver portion, and that is also the Renfrew-Collingwood neighborhood. They coincide almost perfectly. For those who aren't familiar, Renfrew-Collingwood is in East Vancouver, kind of stretching between Renfrew and Rupert SkyTrain station down to Joyce station. So what we do in the community there is sort of three strands that we weave together through different activities. The first strand is community. So we do work to bring together people in the neighborhood and beyond, help people get to know new people in their community and work together. The kind of activities we do that through are art and environmental stewardship. The second strand is art. So we make community-based art, where we engage community in making large projects together, and we also just teach and share art skills with each other. The third strand is nature. So a lot of our work goes towards both helping restore Still Creek and the Renfrew Ravine, which it flows through, and also to drawing people's attention to nature, helping them kind of notice it in a way they might not otherwise, and appreciate and enjoy its beauty. So a lot of the art we do is specifically focused to draw attention to nature or using natural materials.
Nice. That's lovely. Do you think you could speak a little bit more to the importance of improving green spaces within the city where, you know, local community can gather?
Absolutely. So green spaces are one of the things that make or break a city in terms of its livability. Vancouver and Burnaby, where SFU is, of course, has some really gorgeous green spaces like Stanley Park or Burnaby Lake in Burnaby, or, you know, even up at SFU, Burnaby Mountain is lovely. But we also have large parts of the city that are paved and lack trees or green spaces. And of course, as neighborhoods densify, as more people move to the city and we replace single family homes with condos and high rises, that puts more pressure on those natural spaces. And, you know, people have a kind of harder time having time in nature. And also, as climate change progresses, it also kind of becomes more important, because a lot of these green spaces also provide mitigation and protection against climate change. So in heavily paved areas where there isn't a lot of tree cover, you get heat island effect, where the concrete absorbs heat and magnifies it, so that the temperature in highly paved areas is usually several degrees warmer than in areas with green spaces in close proximity. Another thing we see that makes green spaces, and especially green spaces connected to creek systems, important is with climate change, we see increased flooding and droughts, and how water is managed going into both where it falls on the ground as rainwater, and also kind of how quickly it flows through the system or how slowly it moves through the system. makes a big difference to whether we see kind of flooding and droughts or whether the ground can kind of act as a bank for water. Some people use the phrase sponge city, which I really like, which kind of describes the ground being a sponge that can hold water and then release it over time. So there's a lot of things we can do in stewarding our green spaces that improve life for people who live in the city, both in terms of the beauty and relaxation that comes with being in green spaces and enjoying nature, but also well-being in terms of protection against heat and flood and that sort of thing. And I know that there's some really gorgeous big parks in Vancouver. The one we focus on, Renfrew Ravine Park, is actually one that's lesser known. It is one of Vancouver's significant urban forests, but it's hidden away in East Vancouver, and a lot of people don't realize it's there. So it's this beautiful little jewel surrounded by a neighborhood which is much more heavily paved than a lot of areas in the city. So we're really kind of fortunate in a neighborhood that it does have so much paved areas that we also have this little oasis in the middle that people can get away to. Well, I'll also mention that Still Creek, that a lot of our work centers around, is very unusual in Vancouver because it's one of very few of the original creeks in Vancouver that was never fully paved over and brought underground. Vancouver used to be full of bogs, swamps, rivers, creeks that were full of beavers, fish, and the landscape was really different across the city. Over time, as cities got developed, most of the creeks were brought underground into the sewer system. You know, at the time, that did help protect people from some of the diseases that could be caught through, you know, untreated sewage, but it also meant that we lost a lot of those beautiful places, and we also lost a lot of the water management that they provided, which is why we now have problems with flooding. And especially as the city grows more dense and more water is getting used, and there's less and less space for water to flow over land, the problem with drought and flooding are getting worse. So we're lucky in Still Creek that we have this stretch of river that was never buried underground. And we're also doubly lucky because it's one of the only few remaining salmon streams left in Vancouver. I think there's only about five. Most of them are at the edges of the city, such as around Kits, you know, around UBC. I think there's a couple. But we are the only one that is located centrally in a heavily urbanized area. And the salmon were actually gone from the creek, from the Vancouver portion of the creek, for over 80 years. And in 2012, they started coming back to an area behind the Canadian Tire there by Rupert SkyTrain station. And it was a really uplifting moment, I think, for a lot of people who work on environmental issues, because people had said that the creek was too heavily polluted, that salmon would never come back there. But they did. And a lot of people worked hard to restore the creek leading up to that. And there was also some infrastructure change, putting in kind of some infrastructure in under the highway that helped the fish swim through the long pipe there from underground that goes under Boundary Road. But to see that the fish would actually come back and come back year after year and spawn in, you know, a very heavily urbanized part of Vancouver was really encouraging for people who work on these issues. You know, if you give nature a little bit of a helping hand, often things can actually heal and improve. So we feel very fortunate to be working on a creek that has salmon in it in the middle of the city.
Yeah, that is a very nice piece of hope for sure in the face of the climate crisis that, you know, we can come back from pollution and certain other problems. And I know you mentioned that the Renfrew Ravine was transformed, and that must have been a massive project. And I was wondering what the motivation was behind that.
Well, our organization was started by Carmen Rosine, an artist who moved into the neighborhood just a few blocks from the ravine over 20 years ago. And as she was exploring her new neighborhood, she came upon the ravine and saw what a beautiful, wild place it was, but it was also full of garbage. It was one of those many places that people kind of dump their construction waste and or their home garbage if they don't want to have to take it to a dump or pay fees. So it was very polluted. There were several, I think there was at least one car down there who someone had driven into the ravine at some point. Just lots and lots of garbage. So she wasn't the first to work on cleaning up the ravine. She kind of joined in a group of local residents who were already trying to clean it up. What she did was try and put some momentum through bringing art to the community to and kind of organizing people to come together around uplifting, joyful events with celebration and art and music and food to make a difference to the ravine. So originally they were hauling many dumpsters of garbage a year out of the ravine. Now there's relatively little. We do collect several dozen garbage bags of waste from the ravine each year now, but it's much, much better than it was. And as they continued to work in the area, they also got involved in planting new trees in areas that didn't have good tree cover or were filled with invasive plants. So a lot of invasive English ivy and Himalayan blackberry have been removed from the ravine, and new trees have been planted, native trees like cedar and Douglas fir and other trees like that. So local schools got involved, and we started having regular meetups and also created a lot of art around the ravine to help draw attention. So if you walk around Renfrew Ravine, you'll actually come across many little artworks and curated gardens, kind of semi-wild garden areas that people can enjoy. Some of these were built before Still Moon, but and then Still Moon continues to tend to them and has created some new ones. So one example of this is there is a kind of round bench that is surrounded by a big mosaic that shows fish and eagles and other creatures in the ravine. There's also a large pebble labyrinth that is a popular landmark on the east side of the ravine, and that was created by Still Moon with neighbors and also by several years of children from the local schools who came and helped to create it. So various kind of little hidden treasures all through the ravine.
Do you think you could expand a bit on this idea of art playing a role in the conservation of and connection to our environment? Like, how does that work within Still Moon Arts Society?
Sure. Yeah. Well, we have kind of two prongs, I'd say, and again, they're kind of intertwined, but one is just making art that celebrates and draws attention to nature. So one project that we're working on this year is called Water Woman, and it's a giant puppet made of water-loving plants that are grown in the area and harvested from around the creek. Some of them are invasive, some of them are native. And we've worked with the community to both create the puppet and also her dress. And we've had over 1,000 people contribute to making this puppet. And I'll tell you a bit about the process, which I think will help answer the question. What we wanted to do was have a project which would encourage people to think about water, think about their relationship with water, because in our day-to-day life, a lot of people don't really think about it. And just like many natural processes and cycles, we can connect to these things just by stepping outside. And as long as we're able to see it, as long as we're kind of thinking to look and see and realize. And that can create a lot of comfort to kind of have this connection to something larger than yourself. So, you know, such as the land and water cycles. Water is obviously critical to our survival, but a lot of people don't really think about it. You know, you turn on the tap, you get water, but, and then, you know, you kind of worry that there may not be water, you know, with drought and climate change, but something that you kind of are in relationship with. A lot of us don't have that. And we wanted to kind of encourage people to explore that relationship and explore water as something that both they have a connection to, they value, they can protect it, and also it cares for them and it feeds them and nourishes them. So we started out by having some dialogue sessions with people from the community where we would have people talk about, we would have some speakers who would talk about water stories from their cultures or water experiences, their own experience with water, and kind of encourage people to reflect on that themselves. And then they would create a fabric swatch after or during the conversation where they would draw a symbol or a memory or an illustration, something to do with their experience with water and their connection to it. So we repeated this process a number of times. And we also brought in some local schools, and we ended up with over 700 of these fabric swatches that were decorated with designs and images and hopes and thoughts about water from, you know, the hundreds of people who took part in this process. And then we have sewn them together into a dress for a 3-meter tall puppet. The puppet herself, unlike most giant puppets, which are, you know, made from PVC pipe, things like that, our puppet is made from willow that was harvested around the neighborhood. So, which creates design challenges, but, you know, it's really interesting. And I would say fulfilling also to kind of work with a natural material, because you, by working with a natural material, you kind of learn about it in a way that you can't learn through reading books. You really get your hands on it. You learn its properties. You learn where it grows and, you know, how it bends and snaps and, you know, its different properties. So, so the puppet has a willow frame. We have the dress, and we also have the hands of the puppet are decorated with prayers for the water that have been written down by people who attend our annual festival over 10 years. And those are used to a sort of papier-mâché style over the hands. So you can't read exactly what it says, but the words are kind of there incorporated into her body. So, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people's of thoughts and reflections over many years actually have gone into making this puppet. And one of my favorite parts is, because I like to have something to do with my hands, is her hair is made of twined rushes and daylilies and other plant material. So we need hundreds of meters of this twine material. So we also have many volunteers who've been twining away, making cordage that will be her hair. So yeah, and she's going to have her inaugural performance at the Renfrew Marine Moo Festival. So what this project does is, through conversations and facilitated conversations, people have reflected on water and hopefully deepen their relationship with it, or at least, you know, spend some time thinking about the relationship with water. Also, when you see the puppet, you see how many people in the community, because it's, you know, it's large and it has all these elements from hundreds and hundreds of people. It kind of reminds you that you're not alone in kind of contemplating your place in the world and, you know, how the planet is faring these days. But, you know, you're surrounded by a whole community of people who are thinking the same things and worried about the same things and also appreciating the same things. I would say that, you know, appreciation of nature is something that crosses all cultures, and it really is great at bringing people together and uniting them. And then also we have, for this puppet, we'll have a movement performance. So we've We're recruiting, actually, right now we're recruiting seniors and children and everyone in between to be part of a performance at the Renfrew Ravine Moon Festival this year of the puppet. And I think it'll be quite spectacular because actually her head and her hands are both lanterns. The performance will be after dark, and she'll be wearing these flowing robes that are naturally dyed with local plants that will flow like water. And we'll also have people operating her heads and her hands, which will glow in the night. So, and yeah, so it also is creating an opportunity for people to come together and perform. And a lot of times too, we find people have conversations when they're working on these things about just, I guess, appreciating the natural world around them. Most of the work that we do is done outside, even our art workshops. So often it's just, being together, caring for things around you, and creating together is a great way to have a positive experience in nature. And again, a lot of what we're trying to do is create positive experiences, because there's a lot of anxiety these days, but, and I think well-placed, but we can also still take great nourishment and joy from being in nature. So that's one thing that we purposefully try and foreground in our work. So we do definitely laugh a lot. We like performances. We like spectacle. Like I said, we have our big annual festival, which is a lantern festival that celebrates nature and community. And, I think just finding regular opportunities to do joyful, creative, fun things in nature is one of the most healing ways to kind of strengthen your relationship with nature, is to make it a really positive experience.
Yeah, definitely. And I've been to the Renfrew Ravine Moon Festival, and it was quite the celebration. I had a great time. For our listeners, it is coming up in September, right? Could you tell them a little bit more about what it is?
Absolutely. So this year's festival will run from September 7 to the main day, with the big events on September 26th. The Renfrew Ravine Moon Festival is a celebration of harvest traditions, the different cultures of the people who live in Renfrew Collingwood, and art, music, and also celebrating nature around Still Creek. So at its heart is the lantern installation on the final day, which lights up the evening with all kinds of handmade lanterns. And leading up to that, we have a series of workshops, both on harvest themes, on nature themes, and always some lantern making workshops, so that everyone can get involved, make their own lanterns, learn about lantern making, which is super fun. And then we have a Equinox Labyrinth Walk, which has live music with it and is a kind of more meditative event to contemplate season change, with the beautifully decorated labyrinth next to Renfrew Ravine. And we have a vocalist showcase with music in the Dye Garden. And then the main day, with the lanterns at the end, actually starts in the afternoon at Slocan Park. We have a big party with great live music and art activities, and harvest soup for people to chow down on, and also opportunities to make a lantern at the festival. If you haven't yet, you can make one at the harvest fair. And when the sun sets, we transition to the twilight lantern procession. So everyone who's gathered at the harvest fair sets out to walk from Slocan Park along the edge of the Renfrew Ravine to Renfrew Community Park. It's about a 20-minute walk, with music and lanterns and costumes. And when we arrive at Renfrew Community Park, we find the whole park has been transformed by lanterns that line the stream banks and are set amongst the trees. We have also live music set among the trees. And as you walk along, it can be quite dark and disorienting. I remember the first time I went there, I couldn't even really tell how large a space it was because the paths crisscross over the creek and back again and go in circles. But it's really, really a surprise, I think, when you see it for the first time. I had been involved my first year here in planning it, but when I actually walked into the space, I had not at all expected what it would feel like to be there. And it really is a kind of magical and unique event. So it's a great way to mark the change of season. I know often people are sad to see summer go, but to celebrate that season change kind of reminds us to enjoy the beautiful fallen leaves and enjoy the coming change of season. Every season is a bit different, and it kind of is a chance to mark that season change and prepare to enjoy the winter and fall experiences that we have ahead of us.
Nice. Yeah. So I think for my final question, I just think our listeners would be curious themselves, because I mean, I'm also slightly curious about how to get involved with Still Moon Arts Society in terms of volunteering or just supporting.
This is a great time of year actually to get involved with Still Moon. We have events, several events every week at this time of year, because the weather is nice. It's the best time to get things done. We have a lot of stewardship events right now. We have several events every week. Many of them are helping to remove invasive plants from various site locations along the creek. And often at those events, we also do art activities like making dyes with natural plants and then making paintbrushes, painting with them. Also things like twining, natural dyes. All of this is usually done with invasive plants we remove, which we're preparing now to plant in the fall. We prepare now by removing the invasive plants so that the ground has been prepared for lots of native plants to go in September, October, November. So we'll need help outdoors with our stewardship programming all through until mid-November, but lots of sessions now while the weather is still good, while everyone wants to get outside. We also have a new food forest program with our Indigenous partner, Leona Brown. So we started earlier this year a food forest at Renfrew Ravine Park, and we've also taken over helping with an existing food forest at Beaconsfield Park. So anyone who's interested in learning more about food forests, that's a great place to get involved. And the other thing we have going on right now is this giant puppet project that I was talking about earlier. So we've just opened registration for people who are interested in being part of the performance or interested in helping to make the puppet for the final stages. So the giant puppet creation will be going on mainly in August with a bit before and after. And the performance preparation will be in September. So those are open for sign up now. We do everything we do is only possible because of all the volunteers who join in. So really the best way is to help is to get involved in any one of these projects where we're all working together to get things done. Finally, I would say we also have volunteer openings for helping with the Renfrew Ravine Moon Festival. And it's a big festival with about 5,000 people attending every year. And we need a lot of help to get things done there. The jobs there are anything from helping to set up the lanterns to, working in a booth, selling t-shirts, to things like stage managers or helping people find their way at the festival. And we need several hundred volunteers every year to pull it off. And really, we would love to have volunteers of all ages, with experience or without, to help us get the festival done. And we have a gorgeous t-shirt by local mural artist Anaïs Lera to give to anyone who's able to volunteer this year. So yeah, those volunteer positions will start in about 2 weeks. So we'd love to Yeah, we'd love to have people help out. And I know in past years, we've often had lots of students from SFU. So yeah, you'll probably meet other people from SFU down in East Vancouver if you sign up to volunteer with us.
Nice. And you just signed up to volunteer online?
That's right. All these opportunities can be found via our website. We have an events section, volunteer opportunities, and a lot of our events are also on Eventbrite or on social media. You can follow us on Instagram at Stillmoon Arts is our